President Obama is in...
No, you don't. Support for WMNF comes from our members. The 59th Annual Florida Folk Festival, John Anderson, Billy Dean, Bren Prestige, the Aaron O'Rourke Trio, Tom Shedd, and over 300 entertainers performing Memorial Day weekend in White Springs, May 27th, 28th, and 29th. FloridaFolkFestival.com. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be discussing zoos, the good, the bad, the ugly, with Ron Kagan, the longtime director of the Detroit Zoo. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is new music from the Beastie Boys with Funky Donkey here on Talking Animals.
Put this out of zip this. Send it to your lawyer. File me on the funky. Like sipping lemonade and on all time. My big holiday buddies like Dolly Fajon.
So when I get pad thai as a starter, my other order packs to you is much darker.
Get hard or fit, I take a spit. I'm known for my grandma and my grits. Churches are best, I believe my system just. It's like a phone runs a diamond fairy guest.
I don't wear Crocs and I don't wear sandals. The ball don't work cause the vandals took the handle.
Stop singing that song.
Brand new music from the Beastie Boys with Funky Monkey. Okay. Animal song of sorts to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss. Not Strauss Kahn, mind you, just Strauss. Here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Ron Kagan, who's been director of the Detroit Zoo for nearly 20 years and whose career working for zoos has spanned some 35 years. We don't typically invite zoo folk on Talking Animals, but Ron is something of an iconoclast in the zoo industry, most notably, perhaps, through a decision he made some years ago at his own zoo, shutting down the elephant exhibit. We'll discuss that decision, its tremendous reverberations in the zoo world and beyond, and much more with Ron Kagan in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of See Through Me, a great new best of CD by John Taylor, who also functions as the band Whisper Machine and is a pivotal presence in the Talking Animals world. And later, we'll speak with Andrew Grantham, the man and voice behind the so-called Ultimate Dog Tease video. The viral sensations that's racked up nearly 25 million hits on YouTube in the just over 2 weeks since he posted it. You know the one where the voice off screen tells the dog what food treats he was going to give him, but didn't. And the dog reacts with exasperation and howls of protest.
No, I just couldn't stop thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went to the fridge.
and I opened up the meat drawer. You know what the meat drawer is, right?
Yeah. What was in there?
Well, I'll tell you what was in there. You know that bacon that's like maple? It's got maple flavor.
The maple kind, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah?
I took that out, and I thought...
Yeah?
I know who would like that. Me! So I ate it.
Oh!
All right, so that's... we'll hear more about Clark the dog and Andrew Grantham, who knows a little something about talking animals, obviously, and has hooked this whole phenomenon to a real charitable public service bent, which is really why I wanted to speak with him today. Right now, though, it's time for Animal News and Announcement segment, a little look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. Indeed, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, our first item comes from the Canadian Press Services. Headline, five pooches, including a dog named Stinky, inducted into Animal Hall of Fame. A group of Canadian soldiers struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder could barely face leaving their homes and even contemplated suicide before they met Stinky. But the 10-year-old Rottweiler from Winnipeg was the perfect medicine for the traumatized combat veterans and helped them regain their lives after returning home. Stinky was part of a unique therapy dog program aimed at helping soldiers deal with life after war, was honored with the Service Dog of the Year Award on Monday. She was one of five dogs inducted into Purina's Hall of Fame, Animal Hall of Fame, sorry. Her owner, George Leonard, calls Stinky a true hero for helping pull several soldiers back from the brink of despair. One of the soldiers Stinky worked with was featured in a video presentation during Monday's ceremony, says the dog saved his life. Quote, when I was at my lowest point there and I thought about doing some pretty crazy things, I remember one day in particular, we were gabbing there, and she just put her head in my lap, said the soldier, who was only identified as Jeff. I got an anchor there. I got some support. I've hit rock bottom. That dog, thank God, that dog was with me. Having her around definitely saved my life. Apparently, Stinky helped others. Again, something we'll delve further into in a future show. I just love the idea of these dogs helping tremendously soldiers with PTSD. So on a much lighter note and more locally, you might remember last week, Maggie Fitzsimmons, 12-year-old Maggie Fitzsimmons, a great guest, talked about contest, really, it was her brainchild, the Kids for Paws contest, which is open to kids 6 to 13 years old. All proceeds go towards the Animal Coalition of Tampa's spay-neuter clinic. So it's not too late, as she pointed out, to register on firstgiving.com and help out. If you're a kid in that range, 6 to 13, you can help out, you can earn points. And then it all culminates in this big bash, the awards event, June 4th, from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Seaplane Basin Park, Davis Island. The vendors, the bounce house, all kinds of cool stuff. Music by Gracie Grishup of Sunset Bridge, who we love here. Face painting, games, and more. So you can find out more from actampa.org, or you can go to firstgiving.com/actampa if you want to quickly sign up, or if your kid does, or you want to sign up your kid. Also saw this sent to me and just wanted to put it on the air. It's sort of a post on a list, online list. This little lady, quote-unquote, needs a home or a foster ASAP, as I cannot keep her beyond Saturday. She is sweet and affectionate, middle-aged, and dumped by someone. She has one ear partly cut off and seems to be blind in one eye. If someone could just foster her until the 18th of June, I will be able to take her in again. Given her age and defects, I don't want to have to take her to HCAS, presumably Hillsborough County Animal Services, and all other shelters are full. Please help this sweet older girl. So, if that's something you think you could help out with at least until that June 18th time, contact us here, dj@wmnf.org, or talkinganimals@wmnf.org, and we'll connect you. So, also, Sandy Atkinson, who performed at both last year's Talking Animals Festival and this one, we just finished a few weeks ago, premiering a song, in fact, that last year that she seemed to compose for the occasion called Talking to the Animals, and played that again in the most recent festival, has just made a wonderful video clip with that song. talking to the animals. Accompanied by all kinds of cool, terrific photos of animals. To find it, just search for Sandy Atkinson YouTube. It may not be among the first clips that come up, but it's there, and it's really nicely done. So, quickly, again, there's a animal communication basic and advanced courses being offered this weekend, assuming the Rapture doesn't postpone or cancel that, in Clearwater from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. To find out more, prices, details, etc., call Nanny Fran at 727-657-4724. And I think that's it. The rest we can cover next week. Okay, so let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Jerry Seinfeld with a piece chosen with this Saturday's Preakness in mind, if not the general realm of horse racing, and not because Animal Kingdom is apparently the favorite horse. It's a portion of a piece called Horses on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
When you're on the road, which I am not now, you have to do whatever anybody suggests to do for that day, because you got to do something. A couple weeks ago, we were in Pittsburgh. We went to the track, bet on the horses. This is idiotic. I think it's fun, but I never would think for a second that I could figure out what horse is going to win. I don't even think the horses know that they're racing. Do they? I mean, are they walking back to the stable afterwards going, I was third, I was fifth, I was ninth. You cut me off. Watch that. I'll kick your ass next time. I think more likely they're thinking, oat bag. I get my oat bag now. Oat bag time for me. I mean, I'm sure the horses have some idea that the jockey is in a hurry. I mean, he's on him. He's urging him. He's hitting him. Come on, come on. You know, so this is important that I get somewhere for this guy quick, but they must get to the end and go, we were just here. What was the point of that? This is where we were. That was the longest possible route you could take to get where you wanted to be. Why don't we just stay here? We would have been first. I'll tell you one thing the horses definitely do not know. They do not know if you should accidentally trip and break your leg at any point during the race, we're going to blow your brains out. I think they're missing that little tidbit of information. If they knew that, you'd see some mighty careful stepping coming down that home stretch. Easy, fellas, easy. You win, I'll place, whatever it is. All the same oat bag, fellas. The important thing is your health.
All right. That was Jerry Seinfeld with part of a piece called Horses from his album entitled I'm Telling You for the Last Time. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Ron Kagan. As I touched on earlier in the show, Ron has been director of the Detroit Zoo for nearly 20 years amidst a career working for zoos that has spanned some 35 years. If it's atypical to hear a zoo honcho on Talking Animals, it should be said that Ron is atypical. As zoo honchos go, making some decisions and implementing some policies and programs at the Detroit Zoo over the years that mark him as something of a maverick. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Ron Kagan to Talking Animals. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals. There's a number of reasons I wanted to speak with you today, but one place to start, I guess, is that it seems to me that there are passionate zoo enthusiasts who may not know enough about zoos, and there are passionate zoo opponents who may not know enough about zoos. Agree or don't agree?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would say, I've learned some interesting terminology in Europe where the rhetoric to me is makes more sense, which is that there are a lot of people who are animal or wildlife enthusiasts. Now, a lot of those people work in zoos and for zoos and aquariums, and there are a number of people who, as you characterized, would be opponents of zoos and aquariums. But what I think is uniform is that these are people who care greatly about animals and our relationship with animals. And I think that's the ground where we need to try to solidify this so that it isn't so antagonistic.
Right. I think as with anything in the animal world or the world at large, people look at things in those kind of strictly black and white terms at their great peril. And but you seem to really operate, you know, sort of in the gray area, straddling maybe those camps, and you've kind of forged an inventive and successful path as a zoo guy by not always thinking like a zoo guy and not behaving like a zoo guy.
Well, I'm hoping that this is just sort of a continuum, and I would say that I'm very proud to say I'm a bunny hugger, and I think it's very unfortunate if we end up getting so clinical that we define ourselves, you know, very vigorously or rigorously as scientists or animal rights activists or whatever. I think an awful lot of people feel very strongly about human responsibility to properly interact with other beings. And I think whether we work in a zoo or whether we're a layperson or anybody else, I think, you know, that's where we should be able to get consensus.
Right. Well, it seems like that's kind of been a hallmark of your career is trying to get consensus, trying to sort of see where there is that common ground and where people can meet up, as opposed to, as you mentioned earlier, just where people are sort of want to, you know, draw a big line in the sand and hey, there's these folks over here and there's this folks over there. For example, I sent out an email blast yesterday about today's show, and one of the responses that came back was from Sherry Silk, who's the executive director of the Humane Society of Tampa here, but for most of her career was the operations manager for the Michigan Humane Society in Detroit, and who says hello to you, by the way. But her note kind of reads in part that you, quote, allowed the Humane Society to do adoptions in the zoo parking lot for about 10 years, became the largest off-site adoption events in the country. An average of 750, she said, to 800 animals in a weekend would be adopted. And that you were very, very progressive, and it was just great working with them. So as unsolicited testimonials go, that's not too shabby, Ron.
Well, you know, it's funny. We just actually had our springtime Meet Your Best Friend at the Zoo event this past weekend, and despite having horrific weather here, we adopted out over 400 dogs and cats. What we did, it's now been 18 years that we've been doing this. What we did at that time was we tried to use the resources of the zoo, which is really a magnet for over a million people a year who love animals and love to learn about nature, and invited basically all of the animal groups, all of the shelters, all of the humane groups, all of the animal welfare groups. And often we'll have 20 or 30 different groups, and we have thousands of people that come and adopt animals that otherwise would be destroyed. So I'm thrilled that we could use our resources to do that, and we started that in 93, and it's been a big success ever since. But, you know, we also engage people. We have an Academy for Humane Education, which is really getting at the heart, Duncan, of what you were talking about, trying to help people. In fact, our motto for this is helping people help animals, and we think that we have a unique set of assets here that allow people to both get intrigued by the world of nature and animals, but also figure out how not only can they avoid harming animals and environments, but also helping them.
Well, Ron, you know, it's funny. I was, of course, going to ask you about that a bit later, but I think this is as good a time as any. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what that center, you know, how that came about and what it's intended to do and who's all kind of either involved or benefiting from it.
Well, it's really cool because when you try to do the right thing, and I'm sorry if that sounds self-righteous. It isn't meant to be. A lot of us here are indeed passionate about animals, and when we try to figure out how to do the right thing, it's incredible how other people come, you know, it attracts their attention, and they come and they want to help do that. So some years ago, some donors came to us and said, you know, we're very excited about all this work in terms of animal welfare and humane education, and can we help you financially? And of course, we said that would be awesome, and with that tremendous gift and then subsequent fundraising, we've created multi-million-dollar endowment which funds all of these humane education programs. We go out into the community, and people who come here, we engage them in all sorts of different programs for different ages to really help them understand that it's critical for us to tread softly, that almost everything we do impacts other animals, whether it's pets or domestic animals or animals in the wild. And the film that we did with James Earl Jones, which won an Emmy Award and which won, I think, the Prague Film Festival and won a Golden Sign Award from National Geographic, which was called From Animal Showboat to Animal Lifeboat. It talks a lot about the history, and I think that's where, when you were framing this early on, you were talking about zoos and sort of a different viewpoint. I think historically zoos may very well have been part of a problem, and I think there is an evolution now to try to become part of a way to help people engage better with the environment.
Well, absolutely, and I, you know, I think you know that anyone that's followed your career, and even just as you described what's going on with that center and some of the other efforts already, and all the adoptions, a huge adoption event since '93. I mean, you're sort of at the forefront of that. So you know, as I noted in the introduction, I mean, you've been in the zoo biz for 35 years or so, and do you feel like you were always kind of progressive-minded, maybe for lack of a better phrase, even in the earlier years of your career, but less able to maybe act on those impulses and leanings and said, hey, just wait till I'm at the upper level of zoo management? Or did your stance itself kind of evolve as you spent more years working with zoo animals and thinking about them and learning about them?
Yeah, I think probably like most people, I'm a little slow, and, you know, the path is a windy one. I love when I talk to people about elephants, I love telling people that the first time I went to Africa, which was over 20 years ago, I was fortunate to meet Cynthia Poole, Joyce Poole, who works with Cynthia Moss, and the first question I had for Joyce was, you know, do elephants in the wild ever suffer from foot problems or skin problems or, you know, any kind of the stereotypic behaviors that we occasionally see in captivity? And, you know, she politely kind of laughed at me, saying, you idiot, you know. And so, you know, I think anybody who cares for animals is going to be thinking about these issues and wondering how things are going. And so early on in my career, I think that the most direct way I got involved in action, as opposed to sort of just thinking about stuff, was working with an organization in Dallas called STAR, which I have no idea if they still exist, but they were battling with circuses, and we have real concerns about animals and circuses. And also at that time, I started getting involved in rescues of exotic animals from roadside zoos and circuses and things like that. And so that path has certainly been, you know, filled with amazing things, some of them tragic, some of them wonderful. The last big one was about a year and a half ago when we were involved in rescuing 27,000 animals from a warehouse in Texas. And, of course, most of them were small, but there were larger ones too. And regardless, they all were in horrible conditions. And
what sort of animals were those, Ron?
Well, a lot of reptiles and amphibians and small rodents, but there were also wallabies and sloths and coatis. And, you know, I mean, it was kind of ridiculous how extensive that operation was.
Was that just part of that big sort of black market of those kind of animals being provided to people, sort of, if you pay the price, we can
get
you
this? Well, I'm not sure how much is black and how much is gray.
Uh-huh.
Because I think a lot of these were going to dealers and pet stores, some of which I'm sure were legal. But, you know, there's clearly a huge trade that still goes on, and very serious concerns about the animals and in the middle of that.
Yeah, well, 27,000 animals in a warehouse, I mean, black, gray, or whatever, that seems problematic. But let me just let people know that if you just tune in, we are speaking with Ron Kagan, longtime director of the Detroit Zoo. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Ron a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Well, getting back to elephants, and I should just quickly finish the thought for people listening who might not know that the sort of the story you sort of told on yourself is that elephants in captivity often have foot problems, but elephants out in the wild rarely, if ever, have those kind of foot problems. So that's speaking of that, I'd like to maybe have you talk about your decision to close down the elephant exhibit and send those elephants to the Paws Sanctuary in Northern California. I mean, I know this isn't exactly news at this point. I think it was about 8 years ago, and he probably recounted this a zillion times. But I just think, you know, it's notable in all kinds of ways, including what we've already sort of covered and just your view and sort of vision of you know, how zoo animals should be looked at and treated.
Well, you know, the neat thing is the public at large, so not the experts, the public at large was incredibly helpful as we navigated what was a very difficult decision. So first of all, even if you're not completely burdened by history, we know that historically people's expectations of zoos, or, you know, a big zoo, a good zoo, is going to have lions and tigers and elephants and things like that. And what we felt as we continued to try to improve conditions for everything here and started working on designing another expansion to what we'd already expanded for our elephants, we spent an enormous amount of time on this, and we ultimately said, you know what, nothing we do really is going to lead to a quantum leap forward for the elephants themselves, never mind the visitors. And we said, while people's expectations are that we would have this huge, quote-unquote, collection of animals, which we don't use that word anymore, but we also thought, surely the public expects that we'll only keep animals here that thrive, not things which aren't doing well.
Mm.
And we actually started talking to the public about that. We said, you know what, we're kind of stumped. We don't know what to do. We don't seem to find a path here that really would make a big difference for elephants. And if that's the case, maybe we really shouldn't do it. Maybe they really should be in a better climate, and these animals really need huge space and complex space, and they need big social groups and all sorts of other things. And no matter what we did, we just couldn't see a path that wasn't filled with huge compromises. And, you know, compromises are part of life, but if they're huge, then you're concerned. So in any event, we ultimately managed to find a solution, and I'm very happy we did what we did. I wish we'd done it sooner, but it wasn't an easy thing to do, and you know.
And at the time, Ron, I mean, and maybe even since, but talk a little bit about the sort of reverberations. I mean, I got to believe that, you know, at least somewhere amongst the industry, that you might be viewed as the nutty rogue who cut loose the, you know, sort of one of the biggest marquee attractions that a zoo would have. And, you know, were there concerns about what Ron do next, but also equal concerns about, hey, will other zoo directors follow suit? Or was it pretty isolated, just the decision you made and how you made it?
I think when you make decisions in life, especially if they're, you know, not common decisions, you definitely get people who are very enthusiastic and you get people who are very upset. And we had all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We also had much of the mainstream in America, at least as far as we could tell, who said, okay, we actually understand the dilemma here, and, you know, the course that you're taking is a reasonable one, and we love elephants, we'd like to see elephants, but if it's not going to be really good for them here, then, you know, that's okay. And
mm-hmm.
I'm really happy because we believed in the community, and our attendance has gone up, not down. So in our fundraising, you know, certainly hasn't been hurt, and I think people respect that we took on a difficult thing and that we figured out a reasonable solution to it. Now, it isn't necessarily the best solution for everyone, and each situation is unique and different. And, you know, I think You just need to be thoughtful, and I really think it's important to have a dialogue with a community, which as opposed to doing it in isolation.
Unilateral, yeah. Well, a couple things. One is that it mentions the passing, but where those elephants that were at your zoo ended up was at this sanctuary in Northern California operated by PAWS, Performing Animal Welfare Society, and it's about 2,500 acres, Ron. I mean, I've been there a couple times, fortunately, and it's an amazing thing. And it really basically allows elephants to be elephants, even though they're, you know, captive elephants. But otherwise, they've got room to roam and lots of water and hanging out with the fellow elephants. And so that's where they went.
Yeah, they did. And it is a great place. And we continue to support PAWS. And our staff goes there. I go there. We, you know, we help in every way we can. But they have an amazing facility and an amazing program, and we've known them for decades, and they continue to do incredible work. So it's it is as good as it can get for a captive elephant in North America.
Sure. Well, interestingly, Ron, a few days after I invited you to be a guest on this show, sort of coincidentally, I guess, there were newspaper reports surfacing that the Toronto Zoo, after debating the issue for some time, had finally decided it could no longer keep elephants at its zoo, and sort of an almost simultaneous report that the Quebec Zoo wanted those elephants. Have you, based on your, you know, history and those decisions you made that we just talked about, have you been consulted in any aspect of this? And if not, I mean, I'd just be curious to know what your view of what will happen and maybe what should happen.
Well, first of all, I never comment about other specific individual communities because I think it's very important for the community, whether it's a museum or a zoo or anything that is sort of a cultural part of the fabric of life of a community, that community really needs to be the one that sort of weighs in on values and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the one of the people that Toronto hired to help them, one of the consultants to help them sort through all of this, did reach out to me, and we provided perspective from our own situation. You know, we don't give advice unless we're asked for advice by another organization. And so I applaud them for thinking through all of this, and I don't know what the outcome is. But you know, hopefully they'll make a prudent decision for both the elephants and for the
community. And I know you're not going to comment then specifically about the elephants that have been at the Toronto Zoo in light of what you just said. But I guess going back to your own decision and how it may or may not apply just generally to Toronto Zoo or other things, how much, I know it was a complicated matrix of things that went into making the decision that, that you and the community and others finally did about closing the exhibit and sending those elephants to PAWS. But how much of that, was climate? Elephants sitting there in Detroit, or now maybe elephants sitting in Toronto, versus the other elements of wherever an elephant is at a zoo, just that they don't have the room to roam, and they're going to have the foot problems often, and those kind of elements as well.
Well, you know, not surprisingly, it is complex, and it isn't one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a discussion that, in fact, we're hosting an international symposium here in August. We created a few years ago something called the Center for Zoo Animal Welfare, and one of the issues that we think has been understudied and underconsidered is the issue of climate and weather. These days, you wouldn't expect in, let's say, southern Texas to find polar bears in a zoo, but in the old days you did. And obviously, you know, over time people said, look, this is just too challenging. So I think the issue of climate and weather and the appropriateness for various animals is one that the zoo community is wrestling with and is going to wrestle with, I'm sure, more in the future. Aligning what is living in a place in terms of the living resident animals and the conditions, whether it's size or climate or many social things or others. So elephants are not unique in that way. It's just that when you deal with really large animals, trying to create artificial environments that really meet up with their requirements is quite challenging.
Yeah.
Obviously, one could build a dome. You know, you could build a 20-acre dome and have elephants in it, I suppose.
Mm.
But that just seems kind of fantastic, not in a good way.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, when you're getting into the Rube Goldberg territory, display elephants,
right.
I guess, yeah.
Right.
So, Ron, we have just maybe a minute or so left here, and I guess beyond something that might be one of the answers to this that you just touched on, which is climate weather, I'd just be curious to know what you feel is kind of the most important issue or issue, two or three maybe issues facing zoos in the next, coming years.
Sure. Well, I think maybe two things. I mean, I could say 50, but let me say two. First of all, I think more is, doing more for fewer animals. So maybe what I'm saying, which is a bit of a cliche, less is more. You know, I think we need to be providing more resources, more space, more resources for fewer animals, and that will have an effect on the quality of their life, which I think is the key here.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that necessarily we take away a lot of choice whenever any animal's in captivity. Not a dog or a cat because they're domesticated and, you know, it's a whole different sort of dialogue. But with exotic animals, I think the key is to try to give them more control over their life. We won't allow predators to hunt every day, but but I think it is important that is more and more in our sights as an overall agenda for any animals that are in captivity.
Okay. Well, that might be the perfect note on which to end this. I mean, I certainly have many other questions, and we've got emailers and others who have questions, and maybe we can speak another time. But right now, this has been Ron Kagan, the director and CEO of the Detroit Zoo, the great website about a lot of these things we talked about, and some things we didn't get a chance to talk about is DetroitZoo.org. Ron, thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. I appreciate
it. My privilege. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of See Through Me, a great new best-of CD by John Taylor, who also functions as the band Whisper Machine. Played those songs on Sonic Detour back in those days, and instrumentals I still use a lot on this show. And a dear friend who designed the Talking Animals logo, created the website, pivotal to the Talking Animals world. So it's great, great music over the last 10 years' time. We'll give one to the first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this ironically relevant animal tune that we're about to play. In a moment, though, also, we'll speak with Andrew Grantham, who created the Ultimate Dog Tease, the YouTube sensation that's racked up about 25 million hits in the last 2 weeks or so. Right now, though, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Someone told me it's all happening at the zoo. I do believe it. I do believe it's true. It's a light and tumble journey from the east side to the park. Just a fine and fancy ramble to the zoo. But you can take a cross-town bus if it's raining or it's cold. And the animals will love it if you do. It's all happening at the zoo. I do believe it. I do believe.
Okay. Well, we shall see if someone wants to do the name of that animal tune off air. Right now, though, we have on the line ready to speak with us the man behind the so-called Ultimate Dog Tease video, the viral sensation that's racked up nearly 25 million hits on YouTube and counting in the last over 2 weeks since he posted it. You know the clip I mean. We played a little bit of it earlier, and a little bit more of it goes like this.
You're kidding me.
Nope. Not kidding. You know, I also noticed there was some beef in there. Yeah, you know, steak. You know, juicy. Well, I ate that, too.
All right, so that's Clark, and right now we have Andrew Grantham joining us today on Talking Animals. Hi, Andrew.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals. It's the Talking Animals guy on Talking Animals. I think that's perfect.
How ironic is that?
Well, it's indeed. So congratulations on the huge success of the Ultimate Dog Tease, and clearly a true phenomenon. Let's talk for a moment. I know a lot of people are really interested in, we're going to get into some other things too, of course, in a moment, but just to how you approach making these videos, because obviously you've made a number of these before Ultimate Dog Tease, and then maybe you could even address more specifically how you made this one.
Well, it takes a lot of time looking at hundreds and hundreds of potential clips of animals and just trying to work out almost lip reading what might be going on in the scene. And, I basically watch them with the sound off. And, if I start to see a story that's playing out in my head, then I'll play with it a bit and do some voices and see where it goes from there. And if I find that I'm laughing, then I know that I'm getting somewhere.
Now, so you're not ever, cause as I understand it, these are not videos that you're shooting. These are videos that are submitted through your YouTube channel, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never met any of the animals involved. But,
right, which I think a lot of people might be surprised by, our beloved Clark, who we'll come back to in a moment. So that also means that you're not, if I understand this correctly, you're not really manipulating the videos or the mouths of the animals involved.
Not in any way.
Yeah.
The video is kept completely intact.
Yeah.
And I think really that's the only way that you can have something that looks genuine is if it actually is genuine. So.
Right, but I mean, it must take, I mean, again, just looking at, Ultimate Dog Tease, because I think that's the one at the moment most people listening would be familiar with. I mean, I think people will be sort of blown away to know that the dialogue that, and that is you off camera, right? That's,
yeah. I do all the voices.
Right. So it's you and you. But I mean, the fact that the dialogue you're having with, in this case, Clark, which I just like saying over and over because I just love that his name is Clark. But,
Clark Griswold.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I should give his full name. But, but it's just, whatever he was doing at that time in that clip. And from there, the story unfolds, the Ultimate Dog Tease unfolds. So, I mean, I can only imagine, A, how many videos you must look at before you say, wow, here's something with some possibilities. And then even when you did, I mean, was it just the way all the mouth movements he was making and the way he kind of looks away and comes back? I mean, what made you, because I think I know at least that you just comb through endless videos before you decide to make a new Talking Animals video.
Yeah, I do go through hundreds and hundreds, and right now I've got about 900 more to look at that I've submitted.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and it is a challenge, to try and come up with a story that fits, but I think, just from my own experience with my own pets, I can kind of come up with, the different obsessions and things that our pets seem to have, and I had a dog at one point who was just obsessed with food, so that was an easy one to figure out for Clark, so.
Sure. But again, you have made a number of these. I mean, what did you think when you finished Ultimate Dog Tease? Like, hey, here's another good, funny clip, and I've certainly made a number of these before. Or, wow, I really have something kind of extraordinary here.
Well, I had high hopes for it. I didn't really expect it to explode as quickly as it did.
Yeah.
But I think I might have something good here, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So I just want to let people know who might be just tuning in. My guest is Andrew Grantham, the creator of the Ultimate Dog Tease, the video sensation that's an upward of 25 million hits on YouTube. And his YouTube channel, you can just go to youtube.com/talkinganimals, coincidentally. So as you know, Andrew, one of the chief reasons I wanted to speak with you, beyond the fact that this is a pretty amazing viral phenomenon, and I mean, I can't even tell you, and I'm sure, it won't be that big of a surprise given the name of the show maybe, how many people have sent me that video or the link to that video just in the last 2 weeks. But everywhere I go when I was trying to sort of track you down and just seeing all the comments, I mean, people, including me, are looking at it repeatedly. I mean, it's something really cool and kind of course, funny, but it's also addictive in the coolest way. Like, people just can't stop watching it, And, you've really hit on something, it just seems like, that probably does exceed your expectations.
It's really gratifying to hear that, and I have been seeing it come around full circle myself. People are sending it to me.
Yeah, hey, have you seen this? Look what this guy does. He does something similar to what you do, Andrew. Yeah, but anyway, as I was starting to say, as you know, one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you beyond this phenomenon, and it is a true phenomenon, was to discuss what I think might be the coolest part of this, which is that there is merchandise hooked to the phenomenon, but not like a guy cashing in merchandise, but actually the sales of the merchandise you've arranged to benefit the SPCA Nova Scotia. Maybe you could tell us a little bit how that works exactly.
Sure, yeah. There's a merchandise link at the top of my channel page on YouTube, and it's also just it's available at talkinganimals.spreadshirt.com. And 100% of the profits from that are going to be going to my local SPCA, and the reason I'm doing that is because I'm actually going to be going to the facility there and taking videos and posting videos to show what kind of help is being done. And
you mean the kind of work that the SPCA folks are doing for all these animals that need homes?
Yeah, at the location where I'm actually going to be donating the funds.
Right, right.
So people can actually see it in action. And sales have actually been really, really good, and I'm happy to see that in the first 7 days of the store being open, it's generated about $1,300 for the SPCA here.
Well, something tells me that too will expand exponentially, because I just think as people, you know, find out about this side of things, I mean, just talking to a few people, and I posted a couple things on Facebook once I knew you were going to join us on the show, and people were like saying two things. I love this video, which is, of course, a recurring theme, but also how cool that the guy donates the proceeds. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, don't they have to be that cynical to think? A lot of people would say, oh, my God, I have an insane internet sensation on my hands. I could make a nice wad of dough for myself here. But that's yeah. But that's not how you've chosen to proceed.
No, I've always wanted to somehow help out the animals, because I'm, you know, I'm surrounded by three cats right now myself. I'm an animal freak, so.
Yeah, well, that's just so great. And so I guess, you know, people probably, you know, including myself, couldn't help but wonder sort of what's ahead, though, nonetheless. I mean, obviously your highest priority for kind of leveraging the success of Ultimate Dog Tees was to drum up business and funds for the SPCA in Nova Scotia. But surely there must be all sorts of new kind of professional opportunities opening up for you in the wake of the video success.
Yeah, actually there have been. One specific opportunity has landed in my lap from National Geographic Wild, the TV station, to do a series. So that's we're just talking about that right now, but it looks really promising. So,
and what might that? I know it sounds like in the very early stages. I'm sure you don't want to jinx anything, but what might that involve? You know, as far as
since it's not it's still kind of in the pitch form, I can't really discuss the details.
But okay.
Kind of get an idea based on what I do. So.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. I don't imagine it'd be too far from the kind of cool work that. Okay, great. And at the moment, Andrew, what do you do for a living? I notice, at least on Facebook, it says entertainer, which certainly, you know, I think now millions of us have been entertained by your video, but I don't know if you care to say anything else about what you do sort of day to day or.
Well, I was a website architect for about 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Now, thanks to all of this, I'm moving into doing voice acting as my actual job now. So.
Oh, great. Great, great. And so what is the, I mean, I don't know if you've already started on the next video, but what, I mean, is there a certain sort of procedure and timetable? I mean, once you've combed through the dozens and now hundreds of videos and selected one, how does it work, and what, you know, how long does it take to do something like Ultimate Dog Tees?
Well, it's actually pretty unpredictable, because I never know when I'm going to find the right clip.
Okay.
I could plan that the next one's going to be a cat video if I wanted, but chances are I'll find, you know, a parrot or something, or, you know.
Right.
I am actually hoping to soon do another video with Jupiter, the white talking cat.
Oh, right. Great. Yeah.
I haven't seen his, but,
yeah, he's a star
to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He talks up a storm, so. And, I'm enjoying giving him the attitude that he has. So,
so he's probably next up in the hit parade. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a little feature called Ask Jupiter, where people can actually submit video questions to a cat, and he'll answer them.
Sure.
So there are hundreds and hundreds of questions that I need to go through, and hopefully he'll be able to answer some of those soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool. So it sounds like Jupiter might be the next next thing to emerge from the kooky mad scientist laboratory of Andrew Grantham. Yeah, that's great. Well, Andrew, I mean, gosh, I'm just so delighted to speak with you. And again, I want to remind people too that you can go to youtube.com/talkinganimals and find all of Andrew's clips, and not just Ultimate Dog Tees. But and again, and then if you do go there, you can just find a little button to click on the SPCA Nova Scotia stuff. And I mean, there's really an array of cool T-shirts and things, of course, using phrases, notable phrases from the video, or you can just go directly to talkinganimals.spreadshirt.com, spreadshirt.com, and that just helps a lot of animals, you know, that need to be fed and need new homes and need to be looked after in the meantime. So I just think that's really, really cool. So, Andrew, thanks again for joining us on the other Talking Animals, and good luck to you. And we'll just kind of keep an eye on how things go, and maybe we'll check in for a little progress report down the road.
Sure. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being on.
Okay. Thanks again, man.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So, that is bringing us pretty much to the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, May 25th, when our guest will be Brian Wendell, creator and executive producer of the powerful new documentary Forks Over Knives, which Roger Ebert in his review, in the opening sentence of his review, in fact, calls a film that could save your life. Indeed. So that's next Wednesday, May 25th, on Talking Animals at 11 a.m. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals shows. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next right here on WNF from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from the Flat Earth Society, probably the most adventurous band that performed at Tropical Heat Wave on Saturday. Certainly the best Belgian band on the bill. Say that three times fast. Congrats, by the way, to all who worked on Tropical Heat Wave. It was a fantastic and a huge success from top to bottom. Great, great fun, and great for the station. I think everybody just had a terrific time. Wherever they went, whoever they saw, whoever they didn't get a chance to see, it was just terrific. So congrats, congrats. So this is the Flat Earth Society with Mutt. The only animal song of theirs I could find, I think. And by the way, I heard from Flea, speaking of animal things, and sort of in a reference to our Name That Animal Tune thing, he reminds us that there's going to be a tribute. WNF's going to do one of its fabulous tributes, those things that actually Flea puts together with great mastery. Tribute to Paul Simon on October 15th. So mark your calendar for that. We'll give you the details as we get closer, but that'll be cool. So anyway, again, Flat Earth Society with Mutt taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll catch you next Wednesday, 11 a.m., Talking Animals right here on WMNF. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.